Welcome to Staples.
Hi, Staples guy. I need to get my kids ready for back to school.
Well, Staples has everything they need at low prices, like comp books for just 50 cents, so they'll be 110% ready.
Wait, that's 10% more ready than totally ready.
Yep.
That extra 10% evens it all out.
Sorry?
Well, I'm usually 10 minutes late getting them to school, so.
That doesn't even it out.
Yeah, sure it does.
Make low prices happen. Make 110% ready happen. Staples. Make more happen. Right now, Staples 16-gigabyte flash drives are just $5.99.
Offer valid while supplies last. Limit 5 per customer. Ends 8/15/15.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Caring for Parents Together show. If you've been worried, anxious, or frustrated as a caregiver of aging parents because you don't understand who can help you or where to go for resources, this is the program for you. Diane Keefe, our host, is a professional geriatric care manager who also experienced managing care for a mother with Alzheimer's disease. She will share her experience both personally and professionally. Now, here is our host, Diane Keefe.
Hello, this is Diane Keefe, and you are listening to Caring for Parents Together. I am your talk show host, and today our topic is advocating for the bilingual older adult. Our guest is Julia Ostropolsky. Julia is both an LCSW and an MSW. She received her master's in social work from Washington University and is the founder of the Bilingual International Assistance Services. Julia, tell us, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about the Bilingual International Assistance Services. What all do you do, and how did it get started?
Well, I came to the United States as a teenager from former USSR, and I came along with my grandparents and my parents and my little brother. And so I was much of a speaker for the family. I did a lot of interpretation. And at the age of 16, I was very much involved in the family life. And so that's when I started noticing how difficult it was for my grandparents to get used to the new country, to get used to the new way of life. And I realized that it wasn't very easy for the rest of us. But while we adapted and adjusted, my grandmother was really experiencing symptoms of depression and just not fitting in. The advices she used to make in Russia that worked didn't work here. She couldn't learn the language. And that's probably what caused me to want to become a social worker and learn psychology. And after a while, I decided to help the seniors and decided to help the limited English proficient. So during my practicum, I started working with the Russian-speaking older adults in St. Louis. I'm very grateful to Jewish Family and Children's Services that allowed me to do my practicum and come up with my own goals and objectives there. And I saw that there were quite a few needs. I did get a job with the Jewish family for a while, and I was there for a good 5 years. It was soon thereafter that I realized that other groups also experienced major gaps in ability to relate to the new life and the new community. And so we started, we created Bilingual International Assistance Services in 2002. We're offering case management. We're offering mental health services, interpretation, translation, crisis intervention. We're the only provider of citizenship services that is funded by the state. And we're the state of Missouri's pioneer in that. Frail elderly receive tutoring and preparation for citizenship exam. It's a very involved exam involving U.S. history and U.S. civics and exam in English. And we assist them in doing that. We're also claim counselors. And we continue to work with various communities to ensure equal access to all.
Well, St. Louis has quite an immigrant population, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does.
How many different cultures are represented here? Do you have any idea?
We have, I don't know exactly, but we have interpreters for at least 40 languages, And even then, we're forced to turn some away because we don't have a certain language. So that's just to show
wow.
you how diverse St. Louis community is.
And I would think that, you know, on the coast, it would even be more diverse.
Absolutely.
In many ways.
Absolutely.
Well, tell us a little bit about the rights under the law for limited English speakers.
Well, what we found is that a lot of times the limited English speakers don't know that they should and they legally have the right to request an interpreter. And we've met with quite a few people who did not know that the doctor who accepts Medicare and or Medicaid is mandated to provide an interpreter. And so folks don't know, and they expect their children, grandchildren, they ask their neighbors, and often they choose not to go to a doctor because they think that the interpreter is their responsibility. National standards on culturally linguistically appropriate services, which is CLASS standards, came about by the Office of Minority Health. I believe it was in 2000. There are 14 standards, of which standard 4, 5, 6, and 7 are mandates. And those mandates state that healthcare organizations must offer and provide language assistance services, including bilingual staff and interpreter services, at no cost to each patient or consumer with limited English proficiency at all points of contact in a timely manner during all hours of operation, which means that really, even if a consumer comes in with a daughter or a son who is English-speaking, they should be given an opportunity to choose to work through an interpreter. And very often we hear of situations where a 9-year-old was asked to interpret to mom that she had cancer, or a son was asked to interpret to a mother that she needs a very involved gynecological surgery. And it's just not acceptable in most cultures. And in the United States, of course, we don't support child labor, so don't use children to provide that service. Healthcare organizations must provide to patient consumers in their preferred language both verbal offers and written notices informing them of their right to receive language assistance services. They must assure the competence of language assistance provided to limited English proficient. The interpreters do have a code of ethics. They have to follow the HIPAA laws. The healthcare organizations must make available easily understood patient-related materials and post signage in the languages of the commonly encountered groups.
Wow. That's quite a bit.
And it's only a few of the 14. The 14 usually involve some other suggestions that are
mm-hmm.
not mandates. And so one strives to educate the seniors to help them understand that it is their right to request the service. And Title VI of the Civil Rights that came about in 1964 would make it a plain discrimination if the provider refused an interpreter to a senior, not to mention the liability and how much money they would potentially save on misdiagnoses and mistreatment.
Now, what does immigration help them in any way when they're admitted into the country?
So when they're admitted into the country, they're admitted under different rules. Some come as refugees, and that's because the people are persecuted in their countries of origin. They have real or perceived fear for their lives. They're in need of a new home. They can no longer reside in their current conditions. A lot of refugees come here. Well, you remember the war in Yugoslavia. St. Louis is second in population of Bosnians to Bosnia itself. A lot of Bosnians came here because their homes were burned. They were misplaced. They had no place at home. And so United States offered assistance. And in this case, they receive about 4 months of support and very involved training, but then they're expected to find a job and successfully integrate within the society and learn English. And of course, 4 months is very scarce. Many, many people have post-traumatic stress disorder and other ailments, including physical ailments that stem from torture and abuse and other trauma they endure in their host or war-stricken countries.
Do churches get involved in helping them?
Oh, yes, yes. Usually churches, various resettlement agencies, individuals are very supportive, especially of the newcomers. Now, it's not the case with immigrants, because in order for immigrants to come to the United States, somebody must sign an affidavit of support for them. And
right.
They do not qualify for any support. Their daughter or their son or their whoever signed the affidavit is then taken on the real fiscal responsibility for caring after their loved one.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about Title VI, which is the civil rights law concerning discrimination based on race, ethnicity, and spoken language.
Well, basically, it promotes a positive and cooperative understanding of the importance of language access to all federally conducted and federally assisted programs, and that would include Social Security Administration, that would include Family Support Division, that would include various agencies from the government. It's a title that helps the limited English proficient access services, and it's particularly applicable to language access as it pertains to Title VI regulations prohibiting discrimination based on national origin and based on racial and ethnicity.
Okay. What are some of the questions that residents experience when they're trying to obtain citizenship?
Let me find some for you. They may be asked 100 questions, or rather, they may be asked 10 questions. In order to become citizens, they need to answer at least 6 of them properly, correctly. There are 100 questions to know. There are some assistance for those individuals who have lived here for a very long period of time, such as 15 years or 20 years, at which time they could take the test in their native language. But if they were 65, 70 when they came to the United States, they would qualify to take the test within 4 years and 9 months. And if they fail to become citizens, they will not qualify for continued support from Social Security Administration, which is SSI, Supplemental Security Income. I'm looking for the questions for you.
Oh, okay. Now, that's interesting. So they, if they're a certain age already, they have about 4 years and 9 months in which they can get their citizenship.
Right.
And
whatever
normally
age
a person
they
has
are.
Up to, pardon?
Whatever age they are, they have to become citizens within 5 years. After the age of 65, they would qualify for SSI. But they lose that qualification if they fail to become United States citizens.
Okay.
And that's the result of the welfare reform of 1996.
I was thinking it was 7 years. Is that what used to
that
be?
That was extended by the Congress to 7 years, and it's either about to or already took change for the five-year period.
Oh, okay. So what kind of consumers do you serve?
We serve consumers who are often frail and homebound.
Mm-hmm.
They often speak very limited or no English at all. We've had consumers who had very severe post-traumatic stress disorder. We've had consumers who were suffering from major depression, who were alone. We've had people with severe mental illness. who were both diagnosed and treated and undiagnosed and treated. And they come from various countries. Not only that, in about 2005, we had our first referral of an American senior, and we realized that because of the location of her home and because of scarcity of home visiting social workers, we had been very limited to refer that person. And so we took that person on and realized that we could help also American-born, and as far as poverty is concerned, the needs are very similar. And mm-hmm. as far as the culture is concerned, minorities, whether they're racial minorities or ethnic minorities, seem to face very comparable dilemmas and concerns. And so we now serve about 20% of our consumers are American-born.
Okay. What kind of problems do they have?
The seniors of who are American-born?
Well, all of them, actually. You said they're very similar.
Well, the issues that we've seen were somebody who is living in a rundown housing, and they don't have electricity, and they have no money, and the electricity had been turned off. We had one situation where grandson was taking the money and not paying the bills. We had another situation where somebody needed home care and didn't know how to go about getting an aide. We've had instances where we've served American-born individuals who were over 100 but had never had Medicare and now needed home-based therapies but would have had incredible premiums to pay. And that's on the side of social services. Now, mm-hmm. on the side of mental health, we see individuals who are maybe losing memory or having some difficulties dealing with, coping with grief and loss of a loved one, and who are experiencing losses and want to enter counseling. And so we see them in their home, in the comfort of their home.
I saw a lot of the very same things you were talking about when I was doing geriatric care management.
Yes.
In fact, I had one client that called me one day and had been dialing people in the older adult resource guide to see if someone would cash her Social Security check for her because she was wheelchair-bound and couldn't get out. And I said, well, I don't do that kind of thing, you know. But I will do it this time because I'm afraid you're going to call somebody who will rob you blind.
Right.
So I did go over to the bank. I explained to them what was going on. We did the necessary paperwork. I did cash the check for her, and then I called her daughter and told her what was going on because that was a real dangerous situation.
And what we see is a lot of people are reaching out, and they're so desperate. We've had some people that were not literate, and whether or not they're English-speaking or not, they're not able to even fill out food stamp application or Medicaid application, even though they qualify, and they're too proud to say so. So
mm-hmm.
that also is something that happens.
You had mentioned when we were talking before about some of them doing medication sharing.
Oh, yes. We serve many people that come from very collectivistic societies
mm-hmm.
where they support one another. And one of the ways they support one another is, hey, I have this medication. It really helps me. Once you try it, I think it's going to cure you or I think it's going to help you. And so a lot of times people continue to have these practices. We also see times when the individuals will take medications that they brought from their either homeland or maybe a pharmacy in New York that sells herbs and other medications. And
mm-hmm.
so very frequently, these medications have similar ingredients as do those that are prescribed by their treating physicians.
Ooh.
And unfortunately, it sometimes leads to overdosing. I'm very proud to work with Hedva Levy. She's a PharmD who sometimes have the funds to go into people's homes and provide them with very detailed assessment and very detailed education about the medications that they take and possible side effects and contraactions.
That's a good idea.
That's very helpful, yes.
Yeah, she's been very helpful with me as well.
Excellent.
So did you find the questions?
Oh, yes, I'm looking at them right now.
Okay.
So, what stops one branch of government from becoming too powerful? Checks and balances or separation of powers?
Mm-hmm.
And usually, you're not even going to have an answer. It's just a question. What
right.
did the Declaration of Independence do?
So they're somewhat general questions.
How many amendments does the Constitution have? They're general questions that are meant for a high schooler, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people who are any years past the high school would find it difficult to respond to. And many people that we serve have had either no formal education or maybe second, third grade education in their country of origin.
Wow.
What is the rule of law?
I'm not sure I could tell you how many amendments there are.
Yeah. How many U.S. senators are there? It's a wonderful test.
Well, it sounds like you would have to study for it, for sure.
Absolutely. And our program is based on individual needs, and we try to find and train volunteer tutors that are interested in going to people's homes, because most of our consumers cannot benefit from classroom instruction, whether they're physically too ill or emotionally too vulnerable, or they don't leave home anymore. So our tutors meet with them one-on-one, and they study with them. They use cards. They use various teaching devices. We've had individuals who were deaf. We've had individuals who were blind. We've had various needs, and we have a wonderful rate of success. And we're doing a wonderful thing for the state as well, because we're preventing the loss of income, and therefore we're preventing from the state from having to be responsible for all these individuals that would otherwise become the state's burden.
How many ethnicities do you cover, and how do you relate to them in a culturally appropriate manner?
We, under the Citizenship to the Frail Elderly Program, we serve 28 ethnicities. We're statewide. We have a satellite office in Pettis County. We also have a another office that we work with, collaborate with, in Kansas City, and they serve a number of ethnicities there too. Locally, we choose to employ, we prefer to employ U.S.-trained professionals that are bilingual and bicultural. Sometimes we hire paraprofessionals and train them to become what we call community access workers, in that we teach them how to become claim counselors and learn everything they can about Medicare and how to assist one in understanding the Part A, Part B, Part D, and other benefits. And so we assume that it's difficult for a senior to accept the new culture. And so we gradually introduce them to it. We gradually teach them how to do things on their own. It may start with us making a phone call and then asking the consumer to pick up the phone and try to make a phone call while we're sitting next to them. And so we achieve that by assuring that people come from the same or similar cultures and they understand each other's backgrounds.
So what are some of the culturally different behaviors that you've experienced?
Well, it's a great question. I I've had situations where I was kind of lost. Do I take my shoes off or do I not? Do I take them off before I enter the home? Do I take them off as soon as I enter the home? You know, different cultures have different ways of dealing with these just daily norms. When you get dressed for work, you don't necessarily think about whether your elbows are covered and whether you're wearing pants that day or skirts, but in some cultures it's offensive for a woman to wear trousers. So you want to be respectful. You also want, you know, to not make a big deal about asking, you know, what's appropriate in your culture? Am I doing this right? Frequently, interpreters are very helpful in understanding cultural norms. I kind of try to follow the interpreter's body language and see what they do and mimic that behavior. Even people from the same country have different cultural norms. I noticed that people that were from Iraq that identified themselves as Kurdish seemed to behave very different than people who identified themselves as Iraqi. And so you learn with time, and it's never a bad idea to look up somebody's cultural norms, whether it's Googling or asking a friend who just came from that country or looking up in textbooks, just to be prepared and knowing whether they believe in evil eye or evil spirits or things of that nature.
Well, I remember having an exchange student from Malaysia, and she, you know, believed in a lot of black magic.
Sure.
And it seemed like she commented after a year of living with us, and we didn't have anything to do with that, that it was very eye-opening for her, because in her culture, you know, you didn't touch the threshold when you went out the door, and different things like that. It was just different for her, and I never would have thought of that.
Yes.
And I can imagine that you get yourselves into situations now and then that are, you know, totally from misunderstanding what the culture is.
A colleague of mine, that was so long ago, worked at the Department of Health and Senior Services and was asked by a daughter to provide services to her mother, who was getting ill, who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's and needed additional supports. And so he came out. They met with the potential client, and the client met the criteria and was approved for services. And so right before the services were to start, the daughter called, very apologetic, and said, please cancel everything. We changed our mind. My father is absolutely against it. We're not going to have this happen. And so he inquired further and learned that, the father, because he was not asked, was very upset because it was his house and it was his wife, and so he didn't give the permission and therefore would not allow a stranger. And so the provider went back in and had tea with him, sat down and built a rapport, and then it was okay for the services to be continued.
Wow, that was quite a testimonial then.
Yes,
indeed. Wow. Okay. Well, what kind of in-home services do you offer?
We do have a sister agency. We provide home care and personal care and consumer-directed services. These services are based on the need, and they are offered to both private pay consumers and those that are approved by Medicaid or MoHealthNet, rather.
Mm-hmm.
The consumer-directed services have proven to be incredibly useful, especially to those whose cultural norms prohibit them from identifying their needs and sharing them with individuals outside of their immediate family. So it's possible then for the daughter to take care of the mother-in-law or of their mother without having to have strangers enter the household. and that's the consumer-directed services. In terms of home care and personal care, it's pretty self-explanatory. We always try to find the cultural match so that people would eat the same diet and would enjoy the same language and be able to converse about things that they both know with their past history. And in terms of our mental health services and social services, most of them are home-based. Like I said, most of our individuals don't drive. They're too frail, and they frequently stay at home, unable to leave their household. We've had situations where people were calling for transportation, and they would ask their friend, and the friend maybe just got their license at 78, and so they would get into accidents trying to come here, and it's safer that way anyway.
Wow, that's kind of scary.
Yes. Transportation is a big need in St. Louis, as you know, for everybody. But when you have people who come here with their families, don't know anybody else, the children go to work and the seniors stay behind, sometimes they become very isolated and frequently experience loss of freedom in their ability to socialize and get out of the house and feel safe and build relationships.
Right. What discrimination do you see happening among different ethnicities?
Well, sometimes, you know, there are isolated cases. When we opened, well, in fact, before we opened, and the reason we opened a satellite office in Pettis County was because I was asked to interpret there. And in the process, I went out to lunch and met some Russian-speaking individuals who relayed to me that they felt they were discriminated against, that, you know, Americans didn't want to communicate with them much. They didn't want to be welcoming. They accused them of stealing. And there was even an article once upon a time about how these people come into this country and the government helps them and virtually gives them $50,000-$60,000 each to support them. And so a lot of people, I've come to understand, were very resentful, when in fact what happened in that community was these were secondary migrants who may have worked and lived in California and other states, saved up money, sold their apartment, and brought money back to Missouri because they wanted to live in Missouri. They wanted to live on the land. They were farmers, and they wanted to have a garden and chicken and things that Los Angeles cannot possibly offer. And so it's a slow progress to help educate people that these hardworking individuals build their beautiful homes because they work very hard and not because government chose to help them over American-born citizens, let's say.
Okay.
But I did see that happen, yes.
What can caregivers do to support seniors who are foreign-born immigrants into getting services?
Well, I think knowing is very, very important, knowing the laws and knowing the regulations. Just even mentioning to them that seniors have the right to an interpreter and you're helping the doctors and providers understand that using a professional interpreter makes a huge difference. Assisting them in learning about the citizenship program, because they're not alone. We've had people that have lived here for 20-some years, did not have any public supports, did not have any pension, and may have made may have gotten $100 or $200 a month from their adult children. These people didn't know that they even qualified to become United States citizens. And now they're voting, and it's wonderful to see how they care about living in the community, and they care about, you know, doing the right thing, and they want to participate in elections, and they've learned all about U.S. history and civics. So it's wonderful empowerment tool for caregivers to know that these things exist.
Excellent. Now, do organizations like yours exist throughout the United States, or is this an isolated situation?
Well, we're pretty unique in our mission. We're not a resettlement agency. We don't only help the foreign born. Our mission is to assist seniors and people with disabilities. And in that, I think there are plenty of agencies that have that mission. What sets us apart is that I would like to think that we're doing it the right way. I've always wanted to have equal access to everybody, or everybody to have equal access to services. And so in the ideal world, we wouldn't even need to exist, because every agency out there would be equipped to serving a Kurdish client and providing services to a Vietnamese client and ensuring that a Bosnian client receives the proper care. But we are very unique in that we make home visits, we speak various languages, and we cater to various communities. We're a Sasage community, and then we go into the community knowing what the people need and hoping that they will want to accept our services.
Are there any websites that can be helpful to caregivers serving different ethnicities?
Well, the Office of Minority Health has the class standards published. I pretty much, you can Google it and put in CLAS and minorityhealth.hhs.gov website will come on. Of course, our website is www.bilingualstl.org, and we try to update it often. There is the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, and they usually have wonderful programs to feature. They're cutting edge, and they share various programs that are in existence throughout the United States. I know, because we were featured and we're updated. We update our profile every year. So yes, I mean, just learning the cultures through website and internet is a wonderful thing, and even to be able to identify whether somebody is not well mentally or it's a cultural norm. To give you an example, I walked into a client's home and I said, "How are you doing?" And she said, "Oh, I got the flu. It's all my neighbor. She gave me the evil eye, and I'm not gonna go out anymore." And to know that it's a cultural norm, and to help her prepare herself so that she could protect herself from evil eye and not choose to stay indoors because she's afraid of it.
Wow. So what would you recommend in that situation?
Well, in that situation, I recommended that she thinks of a bubble, and she thinks of herself in a solid bubble that she can see through, and all the good things will come through to her, but bad things will be warded off. And she then and I practiced imagining a mirror that she would carry on her persona, so that if evil eye is directed at her, the mirror will direct it right back at the person that gives it. And
wow.
Protect the client from getting sick. Also, vitamin C helps.
That's true. Well, I think, you know, knowing how to deal with these things is very important, and having a professional such as yourself that has that experience is invaluable.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate having been asked. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I am so delighted that you were on the show today. Is there anything? Well, first of all, would you be sure and send me those websites, and I'll post them on the show page?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then thank you so much for sharing your passion for helping limited language seniors. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Thank you. You're doing a wonderful thing by making this accessible, and I appreciate having been called, and it's my pleasure to be here.
Well, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Visit my website, which is Caring for Parents Together. You can find all the upcoming shows and guests for Blog Talk Radio. I also have the links to all the shows posted. Sign up for my 75-minute workshop, which is free. It's called Three Mistakes Children of Aging Parents Make That Keep Them Overwhelmed, Anxious, and Worried Sick. There's also a monthly e-newsletter, which is chock full of information. And while you're at it, like us on Facebook. Download my free Final Wishes, which helps you to collect information that you need to have with your loved one about end-of-life wishes. And check out the Blueprint for Care book and workbook, written to address just what caregivers need to know. Next week, we'll be talking to Kara Cassidy of Alternative Behavioral Health about suicide among older adults and your family. Join us. Until we meet again, honor yourself and honor your loved one.
You've been listening to Caring for Parents Together on blogtalkradio.com, which airs every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Archive links can be heard anytime after the initial airing by going to the caringforparentstogether.com website or by visiting blogtalkradio.com/Diane Keith. Upcoming shows are posted on caringforparentstogether.com as well.